Okay, that's great. So let's talk about that. I ask there's a concept in loan and zoning, which I love. Anyone out there is a real estate, you know, or has real estate experience will understand this, right? If I look at a warehouse in Chelsea 100 years ago, and I went and visited that or Tribeca, New York City, that warehouse was a slaughterhouse, right? And now it's where Taylor Swift, you know, has her date, right? Like that warehouse has changed along with its context. And so there's a concept in zoning to ensure that land is always put into its highest and best use, called highest and best use. You look at that piece of land and you say, what's the highest and best use of that land in 2023? I have been applying that logic to myself for 20 something years. Every week I ask myself, what's the highest and best use of Matt Higgins now? And when I look at people who got stuck along the way, who are my contemporaries, and I'm like, hey, you're in that same job we were in like 10 years ago. I would have thought that you would have been like a master of the universe. This is not judgmental. I'm intellectually curious. Now, if they say, God, I'm so happy I decided to park here. This is what I was meant to be. Usually there's a melancholy, a longing of a life that could have been. And I'm trying to figure out like what happened. And you know what happened? They didn't ask themselves what was the highest and best use of them now. And so here's why let's make that more tangible, right?
Yeah.
When I went on Shark Tank, which I mean, Shark Tank, right? High school dropout, instead of Shark Tank, Mark Cuban, like the craziest thing. I got such depression the second time I went on. I remember saying to my wife, I was like, she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I can't imagine doing something more uncomfortable that is a bigger reach. And I'm a little sad for the absence of ambition that would be as hard and as stimulating as that. And I hate to think that this is the end of the road. And I don't know what's next. I can't conceive of a harder thing to do. And I remember I have a restaurant on the periphery of Harvard Business School, and I was visiting it. And I remember walking through the campus. I was having this conversation with my wife at that time. And then I was like, huh, Harvard Business School. I was like, I always wanted to go to the best, and I never got a chance to compete because I was taking care of my mom selling flowers. But that sounds like a rationalization. I don't know if I really could have gotten into that institution because I'm not disciplined enough as my son even. So I don't know if that's just talk, but I was like, what would be better than even going to Harvard Business School, teaching at Harvard Business School? I'm going to teach at Harvard Business School. I don't know what it's going to take, but I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to work on that for the next year of my life. And I did that. Now, here's how it breaks down. The highest and best use of Matt Higgins at that moment in time was to fulfill this lifelong dream of teaching and competing at the highest level of academia. Now, the Matt Higgins before Shark Tank, let's be honest, Harvard's not taking my phone call. They may have, but there's no way that I'm getting an audience. But when you go on Shark Tank, a couple of things happen. People presume you're really good at investing, and there's a certain heat around you. And so I would say to everyone on this call, especially business owners, that is the thing that prevents businesses from scaling, is they don't say, okay, what is the highest and best use of my business now? I've achieved this level. I'm doing $1 million in revenue. What's my unlock to go to the next level? Like, what am I missing? And then this usually it's a key hire that you're afraid to commit to because, you know, you're just like, oh, but then I got to commit to 70 grand and, you know, and I don't really have the demand yet. I think I'd have the demand and then it would free up my time. But now I'm nervous because what if that's a bad hire? And, you know, I'm doing it all myself. And then your identity is about bootstrapping because you're like, I've always done it myself. And so that's when most people stumble. They fail to transcend. And so the way I do it, highest and best use. And then I'm honest with myself to say, what am I lacking to be able to go to the next level? And I back to all the small business owners here. I find the hardest transition that businesses have to make is not 0 to 1. It's 1 to 10. It's being able to let go of the reins just a little bit and realize that you'll be infinitely more successful if you could hire people better than you at doing what you do. And I find most business owners still think like employees. They don't take like almost a mercenary view of themselves as a product and be like, that winning is rendering myself obsolete. Winning is hiring somebody better at this job than I ever could be. And I find the majority of entrepreneurs and founders struggle with that because their identity becomes around them doing the work as opposed to getting somebody else to do the work for them.
Well, the audience
This
felt
is
that
fun. I
way.
love that we're having this conversation.
The
This is what I
audience felt
needed
that
today,
way.
by the way. I
Yeah.
was exhausted. I'm sick today. I'm under the weather. I don't feel like doing anything. This is much more cathartic and fun. I just get to philosophize.
This is amazing. I mean, one, I'm glad it is. I'm absolutely glad it is for you. But I want to highlight what you just said and like the thesis of that. It reminds me of something that was said about a very popular YouTube influencer, and it's about their route and why they're dominating the YouTube game. And this line always stuck with me ever since I heard it. And it's basically what you just echoed: care more about winning than about being right. And
That's true.
when you care more about winning, you will realize that you're probably not the best at all the things that you think you're the best at. And it's actually one of the things that I'm actually having to learn in the season that I'm in and accept and embrace in the season that I'm in my business, is that I have to surrender control in order to grow. I have limited bandwidth. I've got limited attention in order for me to grow. And for so many people in the chat right now, for so many people who are watching, you know, because a lot of our folks are a little bit on the newer side of entrepreneurship. They're, you know, ever, right? Not even maybe a CEO, CEO, or like a C-suite hire, but maybe even a lower level hire. And that's tough to do. And I understand that, because we're so, I think, in our system, in somewhat of a broken way, we're always kind of taught that that old adage, what is it? If you want something done right, you got to do it yourself.
I know. I always find that a little bit like, if you want something to stay small, do it yourself. You know, should be the amendment to that one, right? Like, but let's talk about how a lot of people on this call probably got here today, right? Mm-hmm. Like, did it in spite of, you know, it was so hard and no one gave you that money. And like, you know, everyone thought you were not going to pull it off. Like, there was a lot of like rebellion on this phone call, if I had to guess, a lot of defiance. And so, you know, you were born of defiance and then you live defiantly. But the problem is that actually doesn't scale. Yeah. What scales is redefining what success looks like in a very mercenary, objective way, as if you're a product. And so it's like, you do have to pivot from being defiant and belligerent to being somebody who is an expert at deploying others, enlisting others to the opportunity so that they can do the work so you can scale. Trust me, like, I give that back to commiserating. Like, I'm going to asterisk the shit out of my book. Like, just because I've seen stuff doesn't mean I could always implement it, right? It took a long time for me to be comfortable, like, oh, wait, me being a lone wolf isn't getting anywhere. Like, my whole 20s and 30s, right? I was the youngest press secretary in New York. I oversaw the redevelopment of the Trade Center. Like, these are heavy things. I deal with the commissioner of the NYPD and try to get him to respect me when I'm like 12 years old. You know, like, I've been in these tough spots. And so my whole definition was lone wolf, because I had been abandoned and neglected as a kid. Let's be honest, right? Like, but then I realized, like, actually divorce brought me to my knees. You usually need something to cripple your identity so you could rebuild it again. And I was leveled, and I had cancer and I had gotten divorced. And I was like, wait, there's probably a better way. And you know who got me there? Gary Vaynerchuk. I don't know anybody here who knows Gary Vaynerchuk, right? But like, I remembered it was my first experience of becoming fantastically successful by identifying somebody who was materially better than me in so many ways. And I met Gary in a bagel store in 2009. I gave him 8 Jets tickets to start his new agency with his little brother, you know, AJ, and it's going to be huge. And I was like, this dude's totally crazy, but I think he sees the future and I'm going to back him. And I backed him. Fast forward, we're going to do $320 million in revenue this year. It's the largest social media agency in the world. And let me tell you the ways Gary Vaynerchuk is better than me. Gary sleeps 8 hours a night like a baby. I'm lucky if I get 2. Gary doesn't care what other people think. I am constantly auditing where I got it wrong. Not because I fear judgment, because I'm trying to get it right. I'm so hard on myself. Gary is undisturbed. Like, at the end of the day, Gary goes to garage shops and is very happy. He's a very simple life. And if it was all taken away from him, he would still sell shit at, you know, garage sales on the weekend. I'm like, he has a very strong friend group of 15 people that he loves and he plays basketball with. Like, Gary is a better constructed person than I am. And I mean that lovingly toward myself. And you know what's great about it? That means that I have not hit the ceiling of Matt Higgins. Surrounding yourself with better people who work for you and help scale your business also opens your eyes that there's more left for you to do on this earth. And like, the worst thing would be feeling like you were finished work of art, right? You'd be like, well, that's sort of depressing. And so one of the benefit of hiring better people, when you hire somebody better than you, you're like, oh shit, what else am I bad at? This is so exciting. And by the way, all I had to do is pay that person, give them a little bit of equity, and I get the benefit. Like, that's, now I'm like a multi-headed hydra. Like, so if you learn to get excited by discovering what you suck at, you realize how much more potential you have, because you can hire other people to gap fill you. And except don't do that in your marriage, because I think this whole idea that people complete you is also dangerous, but we can get into that.
Awesome. I want to take a question from the chat. And I actually want to bring on one of the leaders in our community, who's Adi. She's actually somebody who has got your book, because I've given to her many months ago. She's read it. And so her question is on your book. So Adi, I'm going to unmute you here and spotlight you here. And if you will, please.
Wait, Adi is one, you know, another feedback for you, Adi. Like, I see you smiling and nodding. like the energy you put out in the world brings back that kind of energy. I'm paying attention though. I was watching that you were, so thank you, because it actually helps a speaker know that you're reconnecting.
Yes, thank you so much. And I appreciate you both, everyone here. Thank you all so much for this opportunity. It's so exciting to listen to your experiences and just reading your book. I was just nodding the whole time. I'm like, oh my God, I felt this before. So I'm excited. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Adi, if you want to, go ahead and ask your question put in the chat here about overcoming poverty and the change of direction. And I can just ask, I can ask it if you don't have it in front of you, but I can.
Yes, please. It's way up there somewhere.
Okay, cool. So Adi says, talk about overcoming poverty to change the direction of your adult future. You seeked opportunities and moved at full force. What mindset, thoughts, or processes made you put your ego aside, be really uncomfortable, and force yourself to tables that you weren't necessarily invited to?
Great question. I think for me, it was realizing I had a great moment on Shark Tank. You'll remember this from the book, so I'm kind of ruining it. But when I went on Shark Tank, as absurd as this sounds to everybody who loves that show, and it's like, well, it's like Mom and American Pie. It's like an amazing show. Why would you be nervous? For me, it really felt like, as a person who had spent so much time behind the scenes architecting things that were not always visible, right? I was a press secretary. I had always been behind the scenes. Now I was really stepping out. It felt like I had to confront every feeling of fraud that I had ever dealt with before. And it all collided in a terrible 48 hours. Back to Gary Vee sleeping like a baby. That is not me. And so the night before I go on Shark Tank, my sweet wife, Sarah, who's my best friend, partner and everything, she's like, she gets up like at 5 a.m. like, all right, baby, are you ready to do it? I'm like, ready to do it. I haven't slept. I was like, this is so stupid. Like, why am I doing this? I had mapped this out all night long while she was sleeping and I'm powering through two Ambiens. Like, Jesus, I have to sleep. I was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell them that I ordered salmon at the hotel. Literally mapped it. I made sure that the in-room dining had salmon in case they were going to call me out. Like, this is the definition of madness. And I'm going to call Rohan Oza because I looked up where he looked. It's only 1.8 miles away. I was like, and he's going to take my slot, right? And I tell my wife this, and I'm like, babe, I have such crushing imposter syndrome. I'm like, I'm going to call it in. She's, why don't you take a shower and sort of think it through? And so I actually went into the shower, and I was like, wow, I cannot believe that I'm willing to capitulate on the altar of this, on the precipice of doing something so amazing. And I remember channeling Eminem, believe it or not. I was like, I'm going to get the poet from Detroit. I was like, I'm going to put Eminem on a loop on my headphones and I'm going to listen to Lose Yourself for 3 hours. She's nice. Like, okay, baby, like that's a good plan. There's a video of me in the car. Mom, spaghetti, nervous sauce. No, already. The long way of getting to I'm setting the scene. So I'm on the show and I'm like, who can I be vulnerable with? Anybody here know Damon John? Put a little, you know, respond if you know him, because I love him. Damon John is from Queens. He worked at Red Lobster. He's a similar journey. He's black. I'm not. But like, we have a lot of things in common, right? And became very close. I pull him into the dressing room and I'm telling the story. First of all, he's like, Matt, you know what? F those, whatever. Like, they didn't sell flowers in Queens. I'm like, but he told me the most important thing I'll tell everybody here when you deal with imposter syndrome. He told me, Matt, you belong here. Because you are here. And so I would say to anyone out there who ever deals with that thing, remember, there's no final arbiter of belonging in this universe. Back to your question. There's nobody who invites you into the table. There's no one who deals with, you know, whatever. The reality is, like, if you're there, you belong there. And that is the simple truth. People aren't going to allow you in. They're not going to tell you that it's your time. They're not going to tell you you belong here. And so that's number one. Number two, then how do you get in the room, though? Like, what's the formula? And so for me, the formula has always been, I hate this word quiet quitting, by the way. I think it's just bullshit. It's just a reflection of our unemployment being 3.8%. Like, quiet quitting is your neighbor's future promotion, right? But for me, my formula was make myself indispensable, whatever it is I'm doing, and I'll always be giving another opportunity. When you make yourself indispensable, either as a business owner or as an employee, right? The cycle of progression is, it creates leverage. People use the leverage the wrong way, though. They use the leverage to try to get more money. They use the leverage to try to get, you know, increase your pricing right away, or for an employee to try to get a raise, right? No, leverage should be used for increased opportunity to supply a service to that person to, you know, get more responsibility. And then ultimately, when you have made yourself indispensable, then you transact. And so for me, my formula about ego has been, I will do whatever terrible thing somebody else doesn't want to do, and I will do it better, harder, and I will make myself indispensable. To this day, even with the book, which I care so much about getting the word out, right? I'm always looking for, what's the weird, humiliating, undignified thing that somebody else who is an author at my level wouldn't do? I'm going to go do that. And so the first time I did it, believe it or not, was I got offered to do a radio interview, and the radio interview was from 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. in the morning, 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. live, talking about UFOs and things like that. And I remember getting the thing and I was like, okay, that's the thing. No one, this is not rational. I will do that thing. And I remember my wife, I got it all set up. I ordered a quarter pounder with cheese and large fries. I went full Queens mode and I stayed up. I did an all nighter to do this, right? I finally go to bed at 5 a.m. This is a true story. 5 a.m. I wake up in the morning at, you know, 8. The book is in the top 500 on Amazon. I'd gone to bed. It was 20,000 because I did the one thing that nobody would do. And I didn't care about dignity, ego. I didn't give a shit. I would talk about UFOs or conspiracy theories, whatever it takes. That was the thing. So in my experience about ego, when you do the thing that other people won't do and make yourself indispensable, weirdly, the universe conspires in your favor. And so that's how I relate to ego. Like, I'm happy when I see an opportunity to humiliate myself. I feel like, okay, this is it. I'm going to do it.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Adi, thank you.
I want to say a quick shout out to Renee. Renee shared on the group chat about your stepdaughter dying and how it brought you to your knees. I just want to acknowledge that, and I'm sorry because that sounds, you know, horrendous. So I just want to say that I see you.
Awesome, guys. We have one more question. We're going to bring on Marlon. So Marlon is another big leader inside Sam's community as well. And Marlon, I muted you here. Are you on here, boss?
Yep, I'm here.
Awesome, my friend. Well, if you don't mind, go ahead and share away or ask away.
Yeah, well, first off, let me say thank you, Logan. Thank you, Sam, for bringing Matt here. Matt, you're freaking mind-blowing. Like, I've been taking notes nonstop.
Thank you.
Like, in my notebook, got it like opened here. So if I was ever looking down, you were just dropping gems. And I really love what you shared just now about doing the thing that's uncommon, making yourself so indispensable. And you mentioned earlier that, you know, encounter with Gary Vee, right? You got to bring someone into your world who showed you that you were capable of so much more and really helped level up the ceiling. And so I've been taught that proximity is power, that my life has changed. All the cool things in my life have come as a result of knowing amazing men and women like Logan, like Sam. It's a very much a product of good relationships. I want to know, how intentional are you with relationships and what that looks like as far as you vetting the circle of influence that you bring to you? Like you mentioned, Gary has 15 people that he absolutely loves, and that seems to be his inner circle. How much do you vet and build your circle? How often does that change? And what sort of relationships are you looking for today at this stage in your life?
Wow, such good questions. Somebody said,
amazing questions.
You're asking questions, they're going to be great questions. They weren't lying. So anyway, thank you. So great question. So I think actually the answer to that question depends on the phase you're in. So let me talk to everybody here who's really an operator now and is building their business. I find where a lot of people go wrong is they settle for the illusion of progress. They think it's been a good day because I had a random courtesy meeting with so-and-so and so-and-so, and they populate their schedule and they let other people set their intentions. And so I think when you're an operator and you're building, you have to be laser intentional with how you use your time and who you spend your time with. You have to really curate. And when I find people who don't scale, or I see a lot of like spinning wheels, it's because they're not being intentional, because they're like, oh, I met with so-and-so, it was a great meeting. I was like, but wait, they're never going to hire you because they have a vendor who's like their brother-in-law. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to switch vendors. Like, what are you doing? And so for me, I have been incredibly intentional to the point of actually creating a lot of friction, because I would be highly intentional because I was an operator building these businesses. And like, I don't want to play defense. I want to play offense. I don't want to respond to every email and do that. So that's my own view. However, when you get to a certain point, you need to make an important pivot, and you need to allow room for serendipity or save space for grace. You need to sort of not be so mercenary about your time and how you use it, because something will magical happen. That is the phase that I'm in now. I'm trying to consciously be intentional about serendipity and creating opportunities for it. So I would throw it back to you. If you've hit your base level, like, okay, the business is working, I'm kind of where I need, I know that serendipity is going to have a yield, then I don't have to be so intentional. But so for me, it comes in phases. It's just so fascinating you're asking this question right now, because like I went to UAE 6 weeks ago, right before the conflict erupted, right? And I'm so glad I did. And I didn't have a very like a crazy agenda. And I had only a couple of deals that I was working on that were marginally worth my time. But I was like, no, I need to allow for serendipity. So many crazy good things have happened as a result of me doing that, that it's amazing. But 5 years ago, that would have been a mistake. The compromises of doing a random trip for 4 days would not have been worth it. So great question.
Wow. Thank you. I appreciate that answer.
Yeah. And I think one more point that I find the one part where I disagree with Gary about, and a lot of like the hustle culture out there, like Gary's book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, right? That's all about like make deposits, man. And then one day ask for it. I agree with that generally, but people now are being very transactional about that logic. You're pretending to care. Your deposits are fake. You're like, hey, how can I be in service to you? It's like, you don't really mean that. I actually think the better way to get people's attention and form relationships is to like lower the bar. Just ask a question. Hey, like if I get a DM from somebody, it's like, hey, Matt, I own a cafe and I'm really struggling with whether I should take my roastery in-house or I should just buy somebody else's beans. I'm like, oh, I could answer that question. When I get a message from somebody like, I would like you to be my mentor. I'm like, I haven't met you. Like what? Like we're going to be, you know? So anyway, that's a way of saying like, I do think people, as they build their network, they should just think common sense. Like, okay, my ultimate goal is for somebody to have a degree of intimacy with me. How do I begin to form intimacy? And one is by lowering myself to say, I have a simple question. I'm going to be respectful of your time. And people go right for the close, like be my mentor. It's like, what are you talking about?
I absolutely love it. And I got to say again, Matt, thank you for just showing up so authentically, because it's like, it's oozing out of you. Like it resonates that you are who you are and that you lived your life very much on purpose being yourself. And that gives permission to just about every one of us to do the same. So thank you for that.
I love that comment. Thank you. That's my goal. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Marlon.
Hey, somebody asked me really quick. I'm gonna speed date on a couple of quick questions if that's okay with you.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, we're coming up to the last couple of minutes, so only if you have time. Otherwise, we can wrap this up. So
no. One quick. Somebody asked me about meditation. I heard you meditate. Yeah, I would. I think meditation is the greatest gift you can give yourself. I mean, both neurochemically and otherwise, I fall short all the time. I'm like an aspiring Buddhist who never quite gets there, but I believe in meditating. And then these other ones are probably a little bit hard to answer in this format. So I'll let you do your wrap. What was the proximity in your life? Oh, that was what you just asked. Perfect.
So, yeah. And let's finish up with, you know, it was funny because your experience coming on Shark Tank was, I had moments like that this morning coming on interviewing you. Just like, I don't even like, what if I just don't try? What if I don't show up? Can Sam just do this on his own? Like, I don't know if I want to be here. Right. So like, but very similar thoughts.
Little old me, the little guy from Queens.
Yeah,
I enter that response. Well, now you know there was no reason.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, what do I like? How do I prepare this and like give value to you? And I actually got on your Instagram, and you have a little link to bringtheboast.com/Triton, which is like an AI tool. So how this wouldn't be a great interview if we didn't talk about AI, right? It's 2023, and so I got on there and I literally asked the question. I was like, I'm going to interview Matt Higgins today. What questions would give value to Matt and also to the audience? And so give me a ton of questions. And there's one I want to end with, because I think it'll be helpful.
That's amazing, by the way. I'm going to 30 seconds, everyone. I'm obsessed with AI as a great equalizer, the greatest wealth creator, right? And I decided, I think I was the first publisher in probably the world who took their book and then took every single study in the book and decided to create an alter ego called Triton. Triton is Poseidon's son, who has the power to calm the seas. So I'm extending my burn the boats metaphor. But 24 hours a day now, you can go to Triton. I pay for this. And you could interact with Triton as if it's me. But what did Triton say to ask?
Yeah, so it gave me 15 questions, but I'm going to ask one because I think it's going to be a great... I'll find the most value from it. I think you'll find the most value from it. And ultimately, I think the audience as well. And so the question was, what qualities make you someone that you respect and admire? Like what qualities do you respect and admire in other people?
Oh, such a great, number one is empathy. People who I think that we have a fundamental choice when we go through hard things. We could choose to deny others that which was denied to us. Kindness, resources, you know, equal opportunity. Or we could choose to take the awareness of the impact of something that was denied you, not having a father, not having money, and choose to extend that to others because you know what an impact it would make on their life. And so for me, I've chose the latter. I know what it means to be powerless. I know what it means to be desperate. I know what it means to not have resources. I know what it means to not have a dad. and, you know, in your life in a meaningful way. And so, you know, I choose that. So for me, when I see people who have been through hell and have saved space for empathy in spite of, I admire that the most. And then from a professional standpoint, what I think has the greatest unlock is people who over-index for self-awareness. When I find somebody who is so comfortable being exposed and so intellectually curious that they want to expose themselves because they understand that's where the greatest unlock, I know that I could do so much with that person because self-awareness scales. When you have employees, by the way, as everyone builds their company, or leaders, when you find a leader that over-indexes for self-awareness, think about it. When they're fucking up or they're like, they're not hitting their numbers, you won't need to, hey, Bob, you know, you didn't hit your quota today. And like you, your whole, all your numbers in your management presentation turned out to be true. Bob will be figuring it out himself. You know what I mean? And so those are my two, empathy and then self-awareness from a practical standpoint, because self-awareness scales and self-awareness usually results in people being emotionally regulated and it just works a lot better. So those are the two I would say.
Awesome. Matt, thank you so much. Sam, will you give Matt a send off, please?
By the way, just the last point, as you scale your businesses, you're going to have to do context switching. You have to be really good at context. So as we wrap up this, I'm getting the signal. Now I'm going back to Harvard Business School with two tenured professors who've been on the faculty since 1978. And I have to prep for a class. So it's like this amazing conversation. So everyone out there, become a Jedi at context switching, because that's how you scale. Be comfortable. All right. I'm going to jump.
Wow. Matt, go crush everything you got to do. Again, thank you so much for taking this time. It was sage wisdom. It was Jedi Master wisdom from Matt Higgins today. Brother, thank you so much.